Blog Talk Radio. Cleanup Hitters program, our 25th of this 2015 season. Hard to imagine 25 already. And it does kind of feel already. Apologies to some of you who might have expected the program last evening at its regular time on Tuesday night. But, well, the host, yeah, Frat House Mike right here, just couldn't... some sort of allergy-related issue. I'm reminded that apparently last year at this time, I apparently suffered from something similar. I'm going to try to get through this program. We'll see how it goes. We're coming to you here for a full 90 minutes. Hopefully I can keep the voice going and not feel too terribly bad. Really bad sinus situation. I don't know. I've mentioned this before. I just feel like I suffer from allergies all year long. That's exactly the way it feels anymore. But anyhow, it's a good time, and I didn't want to miss this week because, for gosh sakes, we got too much going on with just 30 games remaining now, thereabouts, in the regular season. Here we are on September 2nd, my gosh, and we got to have a program. What a better time than now to get our good buddy Sean back in here. We haven't heard from Sean in a couple of weeks. Sean, hey, good to have you back, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Fred House Mike. It's always great being here.
How has Florida been? You've been down there, what, for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I guess, now? And
yeah,
you're back up north, I think, for, what, about a couple of days anyhow, and then you're heading back out again, right?
Yeah, I was out in Florida for about 2 weeks. It was very hot and humid out there. I don't know how they survive all the time. But I'll be leaving in another week or so, so I might be around next week as well.
Okay, that'd be great.
You'll probably be able to hear me next week too. So
awesome.
For all my fans out there.
That would be that would be terrific. And if I can't get past this allergy thing, well, I might just have you hosting the darn thing because, we'll see how this goes. But hey, good to have you. Good to have you. And how are things going with that? I mean, you're doing okay getting around down there. I mean, you're saying you don't know how they survive down there. You've been to Florida before, haven't you? I've never been to Florida myself.
I mean, I've been to Florida on vacation before, so it's a little bit different when you're, going to water parks and whatnot, keeping yourself cool. But yeah, when you're working out in the heat of the day, all the humidity and all that, it's quite a shock how bad things are down there in Florida in all reality, everyday life,
It would seem to me, though, you would probably be begging for a trip to Florida come January, I would think.
The great thing is, too, you know where they're sending me next?
Go
Texas.
Ahead. Oh, God,
sending me
no.
Out to Texas.
Oh, no. Where? Where in Texas?
I think I'm going to be both in Dallas and Houston at some point within the week span that I'm going to be there.
Might
So
you be there for the
definitely
Eagles
going to.
game? Might you be there for the Eagles game on the 20? Well, actually, no, that game's going to be at home, isn't it? That's a home game, I believe, for the Eagles. So forget that. I was going to say they play the Dallas Cowboys on week two, but that's going to be a Lincoln Financial Field game. Joining us as well as always, Nick. You're back to school, buddy.
Yep, I'm back to school. I'm also I just want to say I was thrilled to find out that Sean was coming back for today's show, and I was able to be scheduled for his return. So I'm looking forward to talking to Sean again this week.
It sounds like and it's very possible we could get him in here for next week. So maybe we run a four-man program next week with Caleb jumping in as well. Well, I'm not opposed to that. That's fine. We can do this. Or like I said, particularly if I'm still sounding the way I do right now. But anyhow, back to school. You were saying, well, you're kind of sitting around doodling the other day. That's what you were saying.
It's fun. It's like the only free time I have is actually in class.
And while other people would be doodling, you know, abstract things, well, Nick's doodling potential scenarios for Major League Baseball playoffs.
My notebooks are filled with them. You go through every page, you got different brackets with different teams, different scenarios. I'm looking at them, I'm matching up pitchers. People sitting next to me are looking at it. They're like, "What is this kid doing?" Like, it's a nice way to pass time though, because it's interesting thought, and I'm excited to actually discuss it today as opposed to just writing it on a paper for no one else to see.
There you go. Well, I'm going to let you do all the discussing. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm just going to kind of try to guide things along for the next 80 minutes or so here. If anybody wants to jump in with us, please don't hesitate to do so. We are wide open on the phones right now. You can catch us here 347-826-9964. Pick up the landline, pick up the cell phone, 347-826-9964. You can get us there. You can catch us up over, if you're listening on a computer and you're Skype capable, hit the Skype button. Put you through to us loud and clear. Otherwise, get in the chat room, leave us a message there. We've got a couple of guests there. Thank you. I see you. Or hit me up over on Twitter at FrathouseMike. You can hit me up over there. I'll be putting out our Twitter poll here for tonight's program shortly. What do you say we get around here real quick? And we will take a look at, because surprisingly, there are some games that are already in finals. We haven't had this on a midweek kind of agenda in quite some time, but we do actually have some games that are finals that are playing right now in Major League Baseball. Or if they're final, I guess they're not playing. But we do have some games that are in progression as well, so we need to get Caleb's sports machine in here.
Tonight, through the use of the sports machine.
There you go. And, we do have a final here. We got the Miami Marlins are a 7-3 winner away at Atlanta. They beat the Braves. Miami did. We've got another away winner. The Cincinnati Reds beat the Chicago Cubs at home, 7-4. We'll talk about the Cubs. We're going to talk about the incredible division that they're in and whether, in fact, it might just be the best division. Well, some people are saying ever. We're going to talk about that tonight. I guess with a 7-4 loss at home at Wrigley, I guess they might either be blaming the White Sox fan who buried a hat in their outfield, or, well, maybe they're not as good as everybody thinks. I don't know. 12 hits against the Cubs today. Holy smokes in that 7-4 win there. We also have a final here. This must have really been played early. This must have just concluded, I guess, because I'm thinking of the 3-hour time difference. The L.A. Angels on the road in Oakland to play the Athletics. Angels won that one 9-4. Right now in the bottom of the eighth, it's kind of a shame. The Yankees-Red Sox games don't have any relevance whatsoever to the AL East at all this year. At least they haven't, I guess, since about mid-season. But Yankees are in Boston playing the Red Sox. Right now, Yankees winning that one 13-7. A total of 26 hits in that game, folks. Wow, that's insanity. Also in the top of the first, we're in the top of the first right now. Tampa Bay Rays are in Baltimore to play the Orioles. Top of the first as well. The Cleveland Indians are up in Toronto to play the Blue Jays. We will talk a good deal about the Blue Jays here shortly. As I've pointed out so many times, we've just talked a lot about the AL East anyhow. You can't get away from it. Coming up here in a couple of moments, the Philadelphia Phils are in New York. That's a possible, they could actually take that series rubber match tonight. They won last night, the Phils did, in, a slugfest like we see up here with this 26-hit game. That was crazy last night. The Phils won last night against the Mets. That series now even at 1-1, so the Phils win that. Wow, and that was the first time, if I'm not mistaken, help me out on this one, guys. I would imagine that Nick's got the date right on the top of his head. If I'm not mistaken, that was the first time the Phils had beaten the Mets since, what was it, May 8th or something like that? Do you have that date? I don't know.
I had, but there was another stat they were throwing around the last time they... It was not necessarily a great idea, but definitely it had been a long time since they played that well, which I guess isn't really all that outstanding, but it had been a long time.
Yeah, you're breaking up on me. I don't know if it's my headset or not. Is everybody else hearing Nick there? I'm not hearing it. Send me a message over here. Sean, you getting me?
I'm getting you, Kraft.
All right, you getting Nick? All right, hold on. I'm having a little issue with my headset, maybe. I don't know. All right, anyhow. Yeah, I think I had read it was like, I don't know. I don't know if you had a date there or not, Nick, but I thought I had read it was, going back to the beginning of the season since the last time that the Phils had beat them. But anyhow, there you go. That's what's happening right now. The rest of the games will be coming in later on during the course of the evening. Of course, you got a whole bunch of games coming up there in the 8 o'clock hour and, of course, in the 9 o'clock hour, Eastern time, 10 o'clock hour as well. Okay. Brandon Sandy, I think it's Nick's mic. Okay, I'm not sure. Because I can tell. I already know I'm having a little issue with my headset here as well. It's going in and out on me. All right, anyhow, let's get into a couple other things here. we've been doing this, and it's kind of become a tradition. We'll take a look at the useless power rankings. But they were somewhat telling this week to, I guess, a couple of subtopics I wanted to go to. One of them, Wow. The Baltimore Orioles, after stringing us along there for a couple of weeks, guys, the Baltimore Orioles have just completely bottomed out. 63-69 they are right now, six games under 500. 12 games back of first place. I mean, it was just a couple of weeks ago it appeared that perhaps maybe the Orioles could have been, a possible wild card team. What do you make of, I don't know, anybody want to jump in on what in the world? Did these guys just throw it in? Did they just throw in the towel? Sure looks that way to me.
I mean, it would sure feel that way. I mean, 1-9 in their last 10 games. Seems to me like there's, I think they may have just bottomed out on the season. I mean, yeah. They were really giving us a good run there going into the final month of play, and now we're seeing a team that was once in second place, falling to fourth. Again, 1-9 in their last 10, playing under 500.
Yeah, and they've got a six-game losing streak as of this moment right now. You know, this was a team that very early on I kind of cut my teeth on in our series streak challenge. I was picking the Orioles and not doing too badly with them. Now I'm going to be honest with you. If I put the Orioles on there in my series streak for this week or any week coming up, I'm going to be taking them as a loser, and not as a winner. Six-game losing streak. Got an absolutely atrocious road record, 26-42. But my goodness, who'd have thunk that Tampa Bay right now, excuse me, would be a 500 team and sitting in third place ahead of the Baltimore Orioles. But there you have it. Baltimore has crashed and burned along with the Washington Nationals. Washington Nationals as well. There was a comment made the other evening. I think it was in that same thread there, Nick. I don't know if we have Nick yet or not. But Nick made the comment about the Washington Nationals. You know, here we go with an absolutely, again, another atrocious collapse of a team. 6.5 games out of the NL East. Mets are just running roughshod over the whole thing. 63-59 the Mets are. Absolutely incredible. 7-3 in their last 10. Now, Washington, mind you, 6-4 in their last 10. But, my goodness, they're so far behind at this point. This team collapsed, when was it, about 2 weeks ago? It was two. 2 weeks ago, this team just collapsed, right? Anybody?
I think so. I mean, again, a team that at the beginning of the season we all thought were going to be a runaway in this NL East division. And all of a sudden, they're 6.5 games behind the Mets, who none of us expected to do anything this season, really.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has a lot to do with the moves that the Mets made going into the trade deadline. I think they made a lot of good moves solidifying their team as a whole. But I think you sent over an article, too, about how, like, I think it said that the Washington Nationals may be the most chill team in Major League Baseball. And I think that has some truth to it, because this is a team who still thinks that they have a legitimate chance at the playoffs, yet if they're not going to, you know, if they're not going to put in the work, really try hard, I mean, they just completely fell off. They were a runaway in a couple of months ago, and then all of a sudden we saw this Mets team rising up. The Washington Nationals are falling, but somehow still think that this is their division.
Yeah, and it's incomprehensible to me, to be honest with you, that they would actually think still to this moment that they could possibly still win this division. 6.5 games out, and there's only about, as I pointed out right from the top of the program, about 30 games remaining in the regular season. If they're planning on doing that, they better get everybody in the groove. I'm going to tell you right now, because I think it's got to be getting. I mean, they got to be running magic numbers now up at this point right now. I would think up in New York, they got to be running the magic number. I don't know, Nick. What's your thought on Washington? I mean, we've talked ad nauseum about Washington here in the past couple of weeks.
I think it's interesting because if you think back to the very first shows that we did in spring training, I'm pretty sure we all kind of agreed that Washington's at least a bit overrated. But because they're playing such a weak conference, they gather some extra wins and they're going to wind up in first place. I'm not sure that anybody at the beginning of the season really perceived Washington to not win the NL East by the time the season's over. So I'm not saying I'm not shocked. I'm incredibly shocked that Washington is not only not in first place, but 6.5 games out of first place behind the Mets. But it's interesting that maybe we're just starting to see what we already knew. Maybe we're just starting to see that Washington is overrated and they're not as good as the team as we thought. Now, I didn't think they were this bad. I didn't think they were a 500 team. I thought they were a little better than that. I still thought they'd win the division, and I think we all did. But I also remember all of us at least hinting towards the fact that Washington is not this 96-97 win team everybody's making them out to be. They're not the team to beat the National League. They're there because of the division they play in. Now they've got a competitor in the Mets. The Mets, who, like Sean said, went out and made all the right moves. The pitching's coming together. If they don't have the best pitching staff in baseball, they at least have the deepest, at least. They've got young guys. They've got guys who aren't even in the rotation right now that would be an ace, a two, at minimally a three on 25 other ball clubs. The Nationals, they haven't caught a break. They're underperforming, and the Mets are performing better than anybody else thought they would. So you look at this, and if they're going to compete, first of all, let's establish they've got no chance at the wild card. No chance at the wild card. They're actually closer to the Mets than they are to the Cubs and the Pirates. Secondly, if they're going to compete, Mike, like you said, 6.5 games back, 30 games, the elimination number is 25 for them right now. 25.
There you go. You got it.
Seems like a lot, but that you split it between the two teams, that's 14 more wins and 11 more losses, or 14 more wins for the Mets, 11 more losses for the Nationals. I mean, they don't have a whole lot of breathing room here, and I haven't really looked at the schedule. I don't know how many times the Nationals and the Mets match up throughout the rest of the season, but I don't want to quite declare it definitively yet, but if I had to put money down, I think Washington's done. I think they're out.
Yeah, it certainly would appear that way. One of the questions that I threw out on last week's program, and both you guys were not there, I think I had Nick Swartz and I had Caleb on. One of the questions I believe I threw out last week, and correct me if I'm wrong, if it was earlier, I apologize. If, in fact, this Washington team doesn't even make the playoffs, which at this point right now would not be the case, they're not getting even one of the other two wild cards, simply because of the NL Central, which we're going to talk about here in a moment. If, in fact, that occurs, what do you guys think? Is this team going to get dismantled? I mean, at least management-wise?
I think it'd be hard to defend not pulling the team apart. It'd be hard to defend to your fans that you know, your players are coming out claiming you're the team to beat, and you're expecting a division win, and you've got this whole natitude thing going on, and you not only don't make the playoffs, or you not only don't win the division, you don't make the playoffs, and it looks like they're not going to win 90 games even. Very simple thought, it'd be really, really difficult for the front office to defend not breaking this all up.
You know, I would love to hear from some people down there in that fan base, in the Nationals fan base. Folks, if you're in the Nationals fan base, please give us a holler here. I'd love to get your thoughts on this. 347-826-9964. 347-826-9964. Give us a holler here and let us know exactly what the sentiment is of the fan base in Washington, because this has got to be another, and we've talked about this before, another grave disappointment coming up here. Sean, what would you do with the Nationals? I mean, obviously, you know, as far as players go, you may be somewhat hamstrung. I mean, you'd have to sit down, you'd have to look at contracts, and you know, you got some individuals on that team that you probably can't touch right now. But it would seem to me, from a management standpoint, perhaps maybe the manager himself, perhaps maybe even the general manager, you might want to rethink this, don't you think?
I think so. With, again, such an aspiring team, one that I think almost everyone was expecting to win this division. I mean, even Sports Illustrated issued one of their issues –
Ralph
said that the Nationals was going to be a shoo-in. So I really think that, you know, there's something that needs to be done. With a team that had so many expectations and has just fallen so short, maybe there is a change that needs to be made in management.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there was someone who didn't necessarily know how to use the team that they had. It's like, it's the same thing we could see, like, with the Phillies. Ryan Sandberg may just not have been the right guy for the job because he may not have known what to use it. Because after Manfred left, even in the interim manager, we were seeing at least a little bit more success.
Mm-hmm.
Thought you what to do, especially in this offseason with this national team.
Wow. It's you know, we'll see how this is working here. I don't know whether this whole new segment, this new setup here at BTR is working out yet. That wouldn't surprise me. People are cutting in and out left and right here, sounds like we're also getting rollover to other programs. I don't know. The Nationals are a mystery to me. They really are. I mean, one of the things that we talked about a couple of weeks ago here, and Sean, I think you might have missed out on it. You know, we were talking about the fact that when you look at the team, you look up and down the roster, there really isn't a leader. Who's the leader on this team? You know, there doesn't seem to be any leadership internally in the team makeup itself. There doesn't seem to be any real leadership from the management. And it's really, really just an odd team. Because on paper, they would appear to be a real, that they could be, should be, would be a real juggernaut. But it just, you know, every single year, this is where we sit. It just doesn't seem to manifest itself. I don't know. Any thoughts real quick before we move it over to the NL Central?
Quickly, when you talk about, like, the leader of the Nationals, it's ironically probably just because of his play and the style of play, it's probably Bryce Harper. And when Bryce Harper is your leader, you've got deeper issues. So I think you actually hit on – we kind of accidentally hit on an interesting point there. When we're talking about the Nationals leader and they don't really have any, I think they do, but because of who it is, you don't get all the same benefits from a true leader. You don't get the McCutcheon in Pittsburgh or the Goldschmidt in Arizona.
Right.
The 21-year-old punk that's been in the league for 3 years, been hurt his entire a group of veterans.
And you know,
and that might also
go ahead.
That might also stem from the fact that I think a lot of people were just kind of expecting him to take on the role of the leader on the Nationals. It's like, again, when we talked about it at the beginning of the season, we were talking about a guy who was being so hyped up as this major all-star. And so I think it also had something to do with the media kind of just throwing him into the position. Unlike a player like they're just going to take the team and make it their own instead of someone else telling them that this is your team, take it on. I mean, you've got other guys in the league. I mean, you could look at McCutcheon with the Pittsburgh Pirates. There's just so many of these other players who become the leader. They take on that role. Whereas I think Bryce Harper may have just been thrown into the role, which, again, is just going to cause so many problems right out of the gate. You can't tell someone that they're the leader of something. They have to willingly take on the responsibility.
Great point. It becomes artificial at that point. You know, it's interesting because and I'm not saying that Bryce Harper will come to the same, I guess, demise, but isn't it interesting how we're watching two teams that are kind of running in a parallel formation in Washington, in the Nationals and the Redskins, where you've got a young guy up at the top that probably should be a leader, but it doesn't appear that really anybody's respecting them as the leader. When I look at the Nationals roster, I look at somebody, as I just pointed out, like a Ryan Zimmerman or an Ian Desmond, perhaps maybe as a guy that would step up and potentially be the guy that would lead the team vocally, you know, presence-wise, all of that. I don't look at Bryce Harper yet. That's not to say that his day won't come. I mean, it very well may. But, you know, it's kind of like earning your stripes. I guess maybe, you know, he hasn't done that yet, right? I mean, that's essentially what you're saying, Sean, right? He hasn't done that.
Exactly. And, you know, towards the beginning of the season, maybe, you know, like he showed a lot of, he was putting up good numbers. He had great lines. And then, but if he's the leader of his team, he's not doing a very good job if they're not winning the division they were expected to win.
Mm-hmm.
There's something wrong. There's something going terribly wrong with this Nationals team that needs, that's being overlooked, I think, by a lot of people.
And I think that, again, if we go to the off season with those question marks, it would seem to me that what has to happen is you're going to be looking at managerial changes. That is, the manager of the team, the general manager, something to that effect, because I don't know how much flexibility the Nationals are going to have in really starting to mess around with lineups and rosters. I'm trying to think now. I mean, I don't know what the circumstances are with my good buddy Geico Wolfman. What are the conditions on his contract there? I mean, they might be able to start thinking about getting him moved around. I don't know. Our former Phil. I'm having a brain fart here. I'm not remembering his name. Thank you very much. Yeah, I was just having a brain fart there. Yeah, I mean, they might be able to, because he's, what, 3 years out of here now at this point? So we might be able to start thinking about, perhaps maybe they can start thinking about moving that. That contract was ridiculous, if I'm not mistaken. That might really be him, you know, putting a lock on them. That might really, really be, be a problem there. I can't imagine Harper is. Harper's not a problem yet. Well, no, they just did. They upped him, right? He's getting the big money now, right? Harper's getting the big money starting this year, I believe, right?
Harper, not according to this. He might be, and I might just have missed it.
Okay. I guess it was Trout that I'm thinking of then. I thought they both came in the same year because Trout got the big money that I think started this year already.
Right. So according to this, this says that this is Koch's baseball. This is from Baseball Prospectus. Baseball Prospectus. It says Harper signed an extension in December of 2014, so he's making $2.5 million this year and $5 million next year.
Okay. So his bigger money is yet to come. There you go. Okay. All right, not that $5 million is, I mean, in today's baseball terms, that's not enormous. While we're talking about divisions and looking at where things stand, you know, while we only have about 4 weeks remaining, less than that, I guess, I wanted to bring up what I found to be a rather interesting observation that was thrown out by a couple of people out there. And that was talking about the NL Central. Right now, St. Louis, 86-46. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, 90-win teams. Who are going to be the 90-win teams? St. Louis, 86-46. Well, right now, obviously, St. Louis is going to be a 90-win team. You know, Houston's at 73. Are they going to be a 90-win team? I'd guess not. They're not going to be a 90-win team. I don't know if anybody in the AL is going to be a 90-win team. I'll be honest with you. but obviously, St. Louis is going to be a 90-win team. St. Louis, 86-46, 6 games in front of Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, 79-51. Chicago Cubs, 75-57. Chicago at 75-57 is 11 games out of first place. And yet, they'll make the playoffs as the second wild card team. There are some that are making the case that the NL Central might just be the best division ever in Major League Baseball. What do you make of this one, gentlemen? The best division ever in Major League Baseball? Well, apparently, statistically, it might be accurate. That might be right. What do you think of this one? I think that's pretty exciting. I think it's also pretty sad for the Cubs and the Pirates because they're going to have to play a one-gamer to get in. and one of them is going to have to lose. That's actually pretty sad when you think about it. Comments, go around the room.
I can't speak definitively and say that it is the toughest or the best division in the history of baseball, just because that's such an impressive claim. I mean, the fact that it's even possible kind of it gets me really, really excited, just because we're witnessing some of the greatest competition in the ultimate form of competition, and that's sports. To say that it's the best, because that's so impressive, I don't want to yet, because I want to be sure. I want to know for a fact. I want to go through and look at every division and really, really search deep down to find one other one. But off the top of my head, in the span that at least I've been watching baseball, and this is now, let's see, I'm 19. I started maybe religiously watching baseball in 2004, 2005-ish, so it's been 10, 11 years. This is the best division I could remember, and we've been talking about this all season, and I think we've just been waiting for somebody else to make the claim before we start talking about this, because every week we come on here, Mike, every week we come on here, Sean,
I know.
We're talking about the NL Central and how competitive, how tight this is. We're talking about how great the Cardinals are and how unfortunate it is for Pittsburgh and Chicago, especially with Caleb on this program. We get a lot of Pittsburgh in here. But you're talking about Pittsburgh and Chicago. One of them's got to lose. They're not going to get in. I mean, it's just – it's unbelievable. And to add on to that, you wouldn't be seeing this. And I was very hesitant of the second wild card. You would not be discussing this if the second wild card was not in effect, because as good as the Cubs are, and I'll even say as great as the Cubs are, they're 5 games behind Pittsburgh, who are 6 games behind St. Louis. The Cubs are 11 games out of first place, and they've got a solid record. They're a very, very good team. But if this were a one game or one team wild card this year, if this was the old system, Pittsburgh's a wild card, and the Cubs are 5 games out. 5 games out. So it's not
exactly,
you gotta like right on their tail. So we can accredit a lot of this to the two team wild card and say, because the Cubs are this good and they have the ability and they have the capability to reach the playoffs because of that second wild card, it allows for the Cubs to keep fighting. It allows for these teams to keep fighting. Mike, we talked about the trade deadline. They're buyers. They're through the remainder of the season, these teams are buyers. I was very hesitant because of the Cubs and because of the NL Central this year. I love it because we're seeing this team, not because a lot of the argument was, oh, there's always going to be that one, the first team out. It's not a matter of the first team out. It's a matter of, because the Cubs have a playoff possibility, and at this point, I'll even lock them in the playoffs. I don't think anybody's catching them in the wild card. I mean, I think the two wild card teams are going to be Pittsburgh and Chicago. But because of this, Chicago is a contender. Otherwise, Chicago's 5 games out of the playoffs. So, but to see, back to the point, to see a division this exciting, this competitive, this tight, where you look and you say, who are the top 3 teams in the NL? And the third best team in the NL, you could argue, is in third place in their division, and 5 years ago would not be in the playoffs. It's unbelievable. It's incredibly exciting. And I, like I said at the beginning of this little rant, this spiel, it's you're seeing historically the best competition in the form of the ultimate competition, and that's sports, that's baseball, that's a singular division. We talk about best division in baseball. I'd like to hear a more competitive division in football, in hockey, or in baseball. I mean, this is just unbelievable.
Well, okay, I can give you one in football, at least for the past couple of seasons, was the NFC West. But I don't know if that's going to be the case this particular year. But it certainly has been, where you had an Arizona team that didn't even make the playoffs, with a tremendously good record. Sean, let me get you in here for a moment, because I asked the question, and I'm going to bring in a good friend of ours here in a moment, Richard from New York, and it's interesting because I got Richard on from New York on the line, but Richard's really not from New York; he's from Chicago, and I asked him. When he called into my Saturday program last week, I asked him a question I'm going to ask you. Based on what we're seeing here right now and a scenario that I just brought up to Nick here, where it's almost a shame that, and I agree with Dick, that we're going to see Pittsburgh and the Chicago Cubs go for a one-game play-in in a wild card setup. Should that wild card be 3 games minimally?
You know, now that you bring it up, I don't think it would be a bad idea, especially.
But only because of the circumstances, right?
but only because of the circumstances. I mean, we're talking about a Chicago team that's six games ahead of the next team in the wild card, which is the San Francisco Giants. They're five games behind Pittsburgh, but six games ahead of San Francisco. I mean, like, this is still a really good team, the way Nick put it. I mean, I think that there should be just a little bit more to it than a single game. I mean, you're putting two fairly dominant teams up against each other for one game, especially since they're in the same division. I mean, this is two teams that have probably seen each other multiple times over the season, have really been fighting for this spot in the wild card, and now you're just going to pin them up against each other in one game. Maybe, well, I mean, the other side of the coin is, though, especially since I'm a little bit more of a traditionalist when it comes to baseball, although this is somewhat new, the whole two-team wild card, I mean, it's always been a one-game play-in. It has never been, you know, like a series. It's just the one game.
Oh, what do we have? We only have 3 years in on this.
Exactly. So do you break, I guess you could say, a tradition of just the single game playoff play-in game because of this situation? I think
when have we ever seen a one-game play-in for anything unless there's been a tie in a division? That's the only time we've ever seen it. You know, I remember 4 years ago when this was introduced, and Sidekick and I, and I brought this up here, Sidekick and I on our Frat House Sports Show, and you can go back and see the video of it over on YouTube. You can find the episode. I don't know the number right off the top of my head because we've done over 200 of them now, but you can see where both he and I were very, very vocally opposed to it. One of the complaints that Sidekick made about the whole thing was, he said, when in baseball has anything ever been decided in one game? That just seems completely wrong. The math doesn't work right with the game. We've never decided anything in one game. With the exception of, as I pointed out, a season-ending tiebreaker. That's the only time. So, the concept of going to an extended, say, three-game series for a wild card, though, gentlemen, we know is going to impact the schedule, right? Now, we're either looking at having to back the schedule up, or we're looking at taking games off the schedule. Does that work with everybody's mentality? Nick?
I think it...
Go ahead, John. You can go.
Okay. I was just going to say, I mean, I think it could. We've talked so many times this season already about Manfred wanting to shorten the season. So maybe the two could go hand in hand. If the season was shortened, you wouldn't have to push back the playoffs. You would just, maybe you would be able to fit in that small play-in series instead of game. And I've also got one for you, Frat House Mike. Home field advantage is also decided in one game, All-Star. That's another thing that's decided in baseball with one game. But just a little side.
Okay, good point. I'll accept that for a minute. I don't really look at that as being, and I don't look at that as necessarily being, a groundbreaking sort of deciding issue. But, okay, I got you.
Yeah,
you're right.
Some food for thought.
Yep, no, I got you. I appreciate it. Nick, go ahead.
I think anytime this discussion comes up, the very first thing that would be thrown out when you're discussing shortening the season or adding, taking away games is 162 games. I mean, not forever, but for a long time, at least recently, the season's been 162 games. And baseball is a game of numbers. It's a game of records. And I feel like whether or not it's logical or it makes sense, I feel like if there were ever serious consideration by the commissioner or even so much as action by the commissioner to take games away from the season, you would find a serious backlash from the really, really into it baseball fans.
There's a lot of people out there that would tell you the opposite. They would say, I'd like to see a shorter season for a variety of reasons, whether it be to not push the playoffs into November, or it's just too long, or you don't need that many games, or whatever it may be. I think if you're going to short, if because we're talking about taking games away from the season, I think if we're going to shorten the season, I think what I'd like to see them do is just kind of schedule regular doubleheaders, like into the schedule. Like, hey, May 9th, you're going to play a twi night. April 26th, you're going to play a day night. Just because I feel like there's too much invested in baseball that is beyond the business and the logistical aspect, and that's kind of what makes baseball so great. Is the person, it's the error, it's the traditionalism, it's the avoidance of change. The fact that if you were to take a baseball fan from 100 years ago and sit him down to watch this game, he would know exactly what's going on. He would understand how the game's working. Now, granted, all the rules aren't exactly the same as they were when the game was first invented, but for the most part, it's the same game. And I think that's kind of what makes baseball so great, is that it doesn't change every 3 years like football or like basketball. I don't know too much about hockey, but they try to keep it continuous. And I think when you change the season, whether it's from 162 games to more than or less than 162 games, you take into risk. The numbers aspect of baseball, and any true baseball fan would tell you that the numbers sometimes, or often, as meaningless as they are very, very important to the fan of baseball and to the history and the legacy of baseball. And if you shorten, even if you were to shorten it from 162 to 158 games, I mean, you already hear arguments about players that played in 162, 154 game seasons, and players that have had that 163rd playing game to pad their stats a little bit. There's the whole story about Ted Williams. He was batting 400, and they asked if he didn't want to play the last day of the season. It was a doubleheader. He wound up getting, I think, 6 hits and raised his average to 406 because he wound up deciding to play. But because those numbers are so delicate, and people are saying, what if he didn't play that last game? Would it have been as appreciated? I think to alter the length of the season in terms of games is asking for a lot more than just, does it make logical sense?
You know, I don't know if you recall. First of all, let me. And I'm going to get Richard in. Richard, I'm going to get you in here in 1 second. Obviously, I think we know what killed the doubleheader, right? What killed the doubleheader was the union, and the CBA. That's what killed it. They can have only so many doubleheaders now because of the collective bargaining agreement, based upon an as-need basis. That is, there's just absolutely no room in the schedule. So that's what killed the doubleheader, was the players' union. The second thing I would just say with regard to, and you're right, we've had this conversation numerous times right here, right on this program, as a matter of fact. In fact, I recall back on May 12th, we had former Kansas City Royal Brian McCray on. And I believe, Nick, he was on with you and Sean, myself, and we got into this whole conversation about shortening the schedule. And Brian was like, hey, I don't see any issue with going back to the old system of 154. Let me go to Richard here, because Richard came on my program on Saturday, I believe. And Richard, how are you doing tonight? Thanks for calling in to clean up hitters. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Real good, man. Real good. Now, I had you on Saturday, or you called in on Saturday, and I asked you the question that I've just posed to my two co-hosts here tonight. You know, you've said you're all in favor of taking the wild card to a three game, particularly, I would think, and let me ask you this personal question. Is that because your Cubs are playing well? In other words, is that a circumstantial request on your part this year, or I mean, otherwise we haven't complained about it for three seasons up to this point.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I think it's kind of like a conditional thing. I mean, I think when you got two good teams like the Pirates and the Cubs, you don't want to see a one game playoff. I mean, there's just too much riding on one game. I think it would be fair to do a three-game playoff going forward. You know, I mean, I don't know if it won't happen this year, but I think just, you know, if you have these really good teams, say the Tigers and the Twins mm-hmm. had excellent seasons and they had comparable records like the Cubs and the Pirates, and they finished as the wild cards, you'd want to see a three-game playoff, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think that's fair.
All right, well, let me go to the opposite side of that for you, Richard, because obviously you've been around a while. You've seen a lot of baseball. What do you do with the schedule? What do you do with the season schedule? You'd have to lop some games off, wouldn't you? If we're going to go and expand the wild card to three games, we're going to have to take some games either off the front or off the back end, wouldn't you think?
I think we go to Veterans Day.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I'm joking, but I think we go into early November.
Oh, boy.
They're not gonna take any games off. It's too much
money.
But
is that good for baseball? Richard, really? I mean, is that good for baseball?
I don't know. I think the fans in the town.
Can you imagine playing a World Series in Colorado?
No. But Colorado's not going to be in the World Series for a while.
Well, yeah, but we can't be looking at what the conditions are today. We have to anticipate what they might be in the future. Excuse me, and that's my point. I mean, I don't know. We're already going past Election Day. You know that if this goes to seven games, if the World Series goes to seven games, it's already going past Election Day this year?
Hey, there you go. it's past Halloween. If you go past Halloween, then why not go another week? I mean, gee whiz. I mean, crack those pumpkins and get out the goblins and the Frankenstein masks and, you know, put them on the shelf and root for the home team.
I don't know. I think the season might become a Frankenstein. I don't know. Nick, Veterans Day? Would you want to go sit and watch a World Series game? Say, listen, I don't know if you're. It was pretty darn chilly and cold here in Philadelphia when the Phils won in 2008. Can you imagine it going to Veterans Day, which is what, around November 12, right? I think it's around November 12. What do you think of that one, Nick?
Mike, I got to be honest. I'm a little biased. I don't care when it is. I would love to sit down and watch any World Series game.
So far, Richard's
I'm one of those baseball fans. I don't care when they're playing. I don't care what the temperature is. I'm in my living room with the air conditioning or a blanket, whatever it may be, watching on TV. So as long as I get to see baseball. But no, in all reality, I think you have to – You have to consider when you're playing baseball that late. One of the things you have to consider is and this is really really unfortunate as someone who I I'm a fan of football. I am a fan of football, but baseball is my first love. You have to consider what kind of audience you are losing as we change sports, because I think you see in the beginning of the baseball season, fans stay excited because baseball's back. They lose it a little bit. You lose a bit of an audience, but then it's the Midsummer Classic, it's the summer, the NBA playoffs are over, there's nothing on TV but baseball, you get a little bit back. All of a sudden, you get into the later months of the season, you get into September, October, and really, unless your team's playing or unless you're really a baseball fan, you're losing an audience to football. Everybody's diverting their focus to football, and I'm not even talking about watching on TV, I'm talking about what fans are thinking about. So the later you go into November, the more at risk you are to saying, the biggest game of our season, the biggest game of the year, just so happened to might fall on the same day as an Eagles-Cowboys game or a Steelers-Browns game
or Ravens, Bears, Patriots, Jets, whoever's playing. It might be on a Sunday. There might be football games on.
That could go up against the Army-Navy game, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, but we don't want that now. We don't want that, Richard. Come on now. That's
the deeper
really
we
December.
Get into November, the more of a risk there is that you're losing an audience and their mindset. Everybody starts focusing on football. And I think it's kind of important to kind of end baseball before everybody switches modes, so you've got all of your fans totally focused on what's going on, because this is it's the most important part of the season. This is not the part that you just want to throw away.
Well, it's a good point, and that is you know, listen, let's not forget something here. I mean, if there's anything I think we're all very cognizant of, it is the fact that sports, despite our best euphemistic belief, is dictated by advertisers. And you just made the point there, Nick. I don't know how to correct this. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm okay with going and taking the schedule back to 154. I'm okay with that. Take the schedule back to 154. Take it back to 156 if you have to. Take six games off. And I agree with Richard. Take the wild card and put it as a three-game series. And if we have to sacrifice six games during the regular season, I'm okay with it. That's just where I stand. I don't know. Anybody? Sean, jump in. What are your thoughts?
To be completely honest, I'm a little indifferent about the whole situation. I mean, if they extended the season, you know, great, more baseball. If not, then, you know, I don't think it would really change my perspective at all. I think that I'm not exactly sure if the decisions should go hand in hand of shortening the season and then get, like, if they decided to make it a three-game series, I don't think that decision would concern shortening the season. I think they could do both. They could keep the season the same length and extend the wild card to a three-game series. So I'm not sure those decisions certainly need to be hand-in-hand. But if they wanted to go that route, I wouldn't be opposed to that either. Shorten the season by, you know, shorten it back, like you said, to 156, 154, whatever you want to. They have the ability to have an actual series for the play-in game.
Mm-hmm.
Hey,
right.
Mike,
can
I make a comment?
Absolutely, Richard.
Okay. Just wanted to talk about the Cubs for a second.
Sure.
The Cubs are they're a good team. They're not a great team. They're having a great year relative to what they've had in the past. But they, you know, today's loss was a very tough loss.
Mm-hmm.
They lost, I think, 7-4.
Cincinnati, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, Joey Votto hit a 3-run homer in the top of the ninth. There are two outs in the ninth, and they let two guys get on, and then Votto just crushed one. I mean, it was no doubt about it. It was like deep center field, like 425 feet. I'm just saying, you know, I saw the highlights of that game, and I said to myself, you know, really good teams don't let that happen. Not at this time of the year. They don't let that kind of loss happen. And the Cubs, I'm for them. I mean, I grew up a Cubs fan. I just want to see how they do in the next 3 to 4 weeks. I mean, this is, you know, I don't think they're going to blow the wild card, but it's possible that, you know, I mean.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen either, though.
I don't think so. I mean, but they've got to play, you know, five, 70 ball. They've got to win, you know, 7 out of 10 games. They got to play at a pretty good percentage. And their pitching's not that great. I mean, they have two great starters, and the rest of the guys are good to mediocre. And they have to, and they're young. They're just really young.
It seems to me that they It seems to me they're playing with their hair on fire simply because of the fact they recognize that they're in the hunt. And,
yeah, they are. They are.
You know, that's what it's going to come down to. But I think, you know, I think I asked you even at one point, Richard, if you thought that I asked somebody, I correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, it might not have been yourself, but I asked somebody recently, if it comes down to Pittsburgh and the Cubs having to play a one-game play-in, you know, obviously the odds makers are going to put this on Pittsburgh. That's where they're going to go with it. They're going to go with Pittsburgh.
Yes.
I think you basically indicated to me something similar, that you thought it would probably go Pittsburgh's way. But when you're in a three-gamer, all bets are off.
All bets are off. I mean, this is going to come down to one game. Arrieta is going to pitch that game. And, you know, the Cubs will have a very good chance to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be played in Pittsburgh, probably. And it's just going to be it's going to be a really hard game. But I will say this, the Cubs will be in the playoffs, and that is a significant thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for the Cubs to have a winning season is significant. I mean, Cub fans or the organization is not used to winning. I mean, that's it. I mean, they're not, you know, they had good teams 2008, 2009. Pinella was the manager. He ran them. They were totally wiped out at the end of the season.
Yeah.
That's what happened. They played the Dodgers one game, and they were horrible. They were dead. They had no life energy. But this manager seems to be a great fit, Joe Maddon, and they're going to be fun to watch. They are fun to watch.
Well, it sounds to me like you're saying what a lot of what I've heard a lot of other Cubs fans say recently, and even what I've heard come out of some of the Cubs management there, and that is, this isn't our year, but we're going to be there. We're going to be there shortly in the next couple. So I think that's basically what you're echoing. You're echoing that. Shortly here, Richard, before I let you go here, and I'm going to have to do that because I got other calls we got to get to here. But I want to ask you a real quick question because we're going to get into a conversation about Shoeless Joe Jackson, the commissioner of Major League Baseball. Rob Manfred came down this week and indicated Shoeless Joe, he is not getting that overturned, and no admittance to the Hall of Fame. What are your thoughts on that, real quick?
I really don't know the details of his career and the extent of his involvement with the Black Sox scandal, so I can't say yes or no.
Well, I will say this, and I mean, obviously we're talking about two different games. The game today is not the game that it was back in 1919, but he certainly has numbers that should get him into the Hall of Fame. That would be the case, based upon others of his era that were there. Anyhow, we're going to get into that conversation. Please stick around with us, Richard, and give us a listen on that. Will you, man?
Okay. Hey, thanks for talking to you.
You got it, man. You got it. Thanks, Richard. We appreciate you always calling.
Okay, great.
Before I get over, we got to get Billy Brost in here. We're going to get Billy Brost. Let me get Rick on deck. I believe I've got Rick on deck. Rick, real quick, make it, what do you got on your mind there?
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Real good.
Another good show tonight.
And I'm feeling a little under the weather.
Yeah,
but, thank you.
I hear you with the allergy thing going on. That can work on your sinuses and everything else.
Oh, you're not kidding, man. You're not kidding.
Yeah. But, hey, you guys made a really good point. First of all, I wanted to point out, I think the Kansas City Royals will win 90 games in the AL. You had mentioned earlier there might not be a team to win 90 in the AL. They're at 80 right now, so I think it would take
a
major.
I'd have to sit down and look at the rest of their schedule because, I mean, I think they're probably looking at, like I said, they're probably looking at like 29 games maybe remaining in the season.
Yeah, so I think they'll scrape out 10 in that final 28 or 29, but that's just a little point there. Interesting thing about the three-game playoff, I actually think a one-game playoff favors the Cubs. And a longer series I always thought favored the better team, which I think is the Pirates.
That's interesting. Richard from New York would love you.
Well, I think, and the reason why I think that is because the Cubs can more than likely line up their best pitcher to face the Pirates. And then it's really, you know, if something screwy goes on or, you know, the Cubs get up early in the game or whatever, I think that there's a lot more that can happen in that one-game series that favors a team that probably isn't as talented. And I think most of us on the panel here would agree that the Pirates are a more talented team. So, if I was the Cubs, I'd take my chances in a one-game series, whereas if I were the Pirates, I'd be like, hey, man, I want a three-game series so that our talent, you know, can afford to, you know, maybe have something quirky happen and we'll still win out in the longer series because we have more talent. Just my thoughts on that.
Yeah, obviously, as Richard just pointed out, that game is probably going to be played in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is a monstrous 46-21 at home, where Chicago right now only 6 games over .500 on the road. So, not that I'm gambling, man. I never have been. but I would suspect that the odds makers are going to give the favor on that one to the Buccos. That would be my suspicion.
No doubt. And if I was a betting man, which I'm not, I would put my money on the Buccos. I just think that a one-game series gives an opportunity for a team that's not as good to jump in and maybe catch the better team off guard, whereas a longer series, you're in it for the long haul. I think talent wins out in longer series.
Well, it's an interesting philosophy, and I appreciate you sharing it with us. I hadn't really even thought of it that way. Of course, I think many of us sit over here and just look at records, and like I just did, you know, we try to guess what the guys in Vegas are going to do. Good point. Like I said, I would suspect Richard from New York is sitting over there clapping right now. Rick on Deck, thanks for bringing your measures on that one. I asked you earlier. I'm going to get into a whole conversation here for a couple minutes because we only have a couple minutes with Billy Brost here in a moment on Shoeless Joe Jackson. I think we got into this conversation once before. Real quick, do you think Shoeless Joe should have gotten into the Hall of Fame?
And we did have this conversation before.
We did.
We were talking about how it related to Pete Rose and getting in as well.
My head's a little foggy.
And I think that, I'm for Shoeless Joe being in the Hall of Fame. I mean, you know that I'm somewhat of a backer of Pete Rose, although, you know, there's things
I know you said
done.
You didn't like him. You didn't like him personally.
Exactly. It's like, you know, I don't like the man, but the baseball player belongs in the Hall of Fame. And I don't think he belongs to be reinstated in the baseball, but I do think that he belongs in the Hall of Fame. But getting back to Shoeless Joe Jackson, I think his career numbers, warrant it. I think that, you know, there's really been, I don't know, the ties between him and the Black Sox scandal are weak at best. And I think that the players were eventually, I mean, all of the players were exonerated, weren't they, in a court of law, I believe, if I remember correctly. But regardless, I think that, you know, the circumstances around the whole situation are, you know, especially when it comes to Shoeless Joe Jackson and his involvement are shaky at best. I mean, his numbers during the World Series were great in that series. So to say that he you know, took the money, but, you know, his performance had anything to do with them losing. I don't think that that's the case at all. I think, in particular, the pitching that, you know, was bribed during that series had a lot more to do with it than any position player. But certainly, I think there's a weak link between Shoeless Joe and any, you know, misdeeds that would have went on during that that series that was his, you know, his doing. So I think he should be in. Yeah, I think that the commissioner has a hard job just because of the fact that there's so much precedence against not putting him in. But, you know, if you be your own man and, you know, make your own decision, and my decision would be put him in.
There you go. Well, stick around. As always, please stick around because I'm going to be bringing Billy Brost in here in just like 4 seconds, and we're going to get his thought on it. And Billy is the founder and the editor-in-chief of Baseball Magazine, so he had an opinion on it the other day. By the way, too, I just sent out the Frat House Sports MLB poll over Twitter. Should Shoeless Joe Jackson be reinstated for admission to Hall of Fame? And you can catch me up over at Frat House Mike. At Frat House Mike, you can respond to that, or you can give us a call in here to 347-826-9964 in the final few minutes that I do have here. I've got Billy Brost on the line with me, coming to me from, oh gosh, help me out. I'm sorry, Billy. My head's all foggy. I am dealing with allergies, something horrible. Wyoming, right?
Riverton, Wyoming. Yes, sir. How you guys doing?
Real good, man. Baseball Magazine, baseballmagazine.net, if I have that correct. Again, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm a little bit doped up with meds and not feeling great here tonight. We had a situation the other day talking about Shoeless Joe Jackson in the past couple of moments. Commissioner Rob Manfred came out the other day. Apparently, this occurs occasionally. I wasn't even aware of this, that guys, you know, somebody can, what, go in and explain the process. Go in and file for reinstatement for a guy that's no longer with us. Is that how this goes? Is that the process?
Well, if a player is living, obviously they and their legal representation can file for reinstatement if they're on the permanently ineligible list for Major League Baseball. Pete Rose has done such with his representatives. For Shoeless Joe, there's no immediate relatives still living. He died quite a while ago. So it was his museum. I believe it's down North Carolina or South Carolina. I don't recall. They filed for reinstatement for consideration for reinstatement on Shoeless Joe's behalf, and it kind of made some news. The first headline, I believe, came from Fox Sports, and their headline was Shoeless Joe could be reinstated as early as tomorrow, and that was on Monday. Well, we know what happened. You know, Rob Manfred hid behind Bert Giamatti, Faye Vincent, and Kennesaw Mountain Landis, which just shows me who Rob Manfred is and is going to be as commissioner. He's afraid to blaze a trail of his own. He's afraid to use his own brain to look at the situation and make his own decisions. I mean, he's basically Bud Selig's puppet. Continuation of Bud Selig as commissioner, and I tore into him pretty good. I wrote a piece for a site that I do some occasional work for called FueledBySports.com, and I basically laid out an argument as to why Rob Manfred should have given Joe Jackson an opportunity to be reinstated, because just because Joe Jackson gets reinstated, there's no guarantee he gets in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And you've had writers point out the fact that when he was still eligible on the Hall of Fame ballot, he didn't get enough votes to get in. So just because he's reinstated now doesn't mean he's necessarily going to get into the Hall of Fame, but I think we all know he would eventually.
Let me ask you a question. Is this a precursor to the fact that Pete Rose is not going to get reinstated as well? In other words, if in fact Manfred had come out and reinstated Joe Jackson, well, then there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be very, very annoyed at Rob Manfred if, in fact, he doesn't extend the same privilege, olive branch, et cetera, to Pete Rose, because wasn't Pete Rose scheduled to meet with Rob Manfred last month as well?
Well, from what I understand, he did meet with Commissioner Manfred. They discussed the basic layout of his argument for reinstatement. And from what I've read and understood, Commissioner Manfred is going to make a ruling later this year. My guess is it will be after the World Series. He does not want Pete Rose taking away from his postseason. And with the ruling on Jackson yesterday, Pete Rose has no prayer as long as Rob Manfred is the commissioner. And as I wrote in my piece, one player should really have nothing to do with the other. The only connecting link is that they're both on the ineligible list. Sure, there was gambling involved. That's the other link. Pete Rose has admitted he gambled, you know, on the Reds when he was manager. He gambled as a player. I'm still waiting for one shred of evidence that says he bet against the Reds or any team he played for. I understand that gambling is the cardinal sin of baseball, but come on, we lived through the steroid era, and some of those guys are still standing. To me, if you taint the game, you taint the game. You can't exile someone for life on one hand and then let someone like Alex Rodriguez come in and hit 30 home runs a year after a suspension, because you don't know how long he used. He tainted the game. Pete Rose tainted the game. Shoeless Joe Jackson tainted the game. If A-Rod's in, Rose should be in. Jackson should be in, and anyone else that should be in. It's got to be one or the other. You can't pick and choose, in my opinion.
Wow. It's a tremendously progressive way of thinking about things, and I understand it. You know, I'm wondering, let me ask this real quick question as well. The old adage that time heals all wounds. Is this not a situation for the vast majority of our 21st century fans today who are out there? We appreciate the game of baseball. Isn't this a situation where we sit back and we go, oh, come on, cut the guy a break already. I mean, he's already served his time, whether it be Shoeless Joe or Pete Rose or whomever. Isn't that what it is? I mean, at the moment that occurred, we're annoyed, but at the, you know, on the backside of it, it all suddenly – it all becomes, that was then, this is now. Isn't that what it is?
Well, I absolutely believe that's what it is. The United States of America is a very forgiving country. I mean, we've forgiven presidents, we have forgiven athletes, we have forgiven soldiers. We look to give people second chances. We like to build people up, we like to destroy them, and then we like to build them back up. And a lot of the people, a lot of the young sports writers, probably never saw Pete Rose play or manage a game in their lives, to be honest. You remember Pete Rose, I'm sure, when he played for the Phillies.
Absolutely.
I remember seeing Pete Rose as a child at the end of his career when he was a player manager for the Reds. I remember seeing him at Jack Murphy Stadium several times. He's always intrigued me, not so much for what he did as a hitter, but the fact that the guy played over 500 games at five different positions. That's always been the part about Pete Rose that's intrigued me. The fact that he's played more innings than any player in history. The fact that he's been involved in more winning baseball games than any player in history. I'm not saying hand him a manager's job. You know, let him remain with Fox and do his baseball analysis. But give him an opportunity to get what he has justifiably earned as a baseball player, which is enshrinement into Cooperstown. And you get people that say, well, it's got to be one or the other. Well, it doesn't have to be one or the other.
Correct.
Rob Manfred can decide the terms of reinstatement as he sees fit. He can say, you know what, you are eligible for enshrinement into Cooperstown. You will never hold another baseball job with any team associated with Major League Baseball or Minor League Baseball. And it can be that crystal clear. And I think that's all Rose wants. I honestly don't think at his age he has any desire to return to a dugout.
I would agree with you 100%. I will be honest. We've had the conversation right here on this particular program this past year, I was gravely devastated by the new evidence that, in fact, he did bet when he was a player. That really, really bothered me. It bothered me only because of the fact, Billy, it's well known that that is a rule that you cannot say I wasn't aware of. That's ridiculous. Apparently, it's plastered everywhere. You know that rule. And for him to do that, I found very, very disappointing. I mean, I understand, all right, you know, as a manager, whatever, but as a player, he affects a game much more than he does, in my opinion, as a manager. That was just my personal opinion. But I agree with you. I think that on merit, on numbers, Pete Rose should probably be in there. You had indicated yesterday to me anyhow, or at least in some posts that you had placed up, that baseballmagazine.net, boy, oh boy, you guys are going gangbusters over there.
We are. We just released our August/September issue. We've been posting pieces every single day, and we're getting outstanding feedback. People are really embracing what we're doing. We've had some great pieces. One of my senior writers, Jason Evans, started a series called Lost MLB Dynasties, and he wrote about the 1980s New York Mets and how's it that that team was so talented, had so much top-notch personnel, and they only won one World Series title during the 1980s. And that was an excellent piece. I wrote a piece that went up yesterday asking if the real baseball card collector was a dinosaur. I mean, how many kids do you know?
How many kids do you know
that walk around with enough cash in their pocket to go to a store and to pay $5 or $10 for a pack of cards now? It isn't. And I got some pretty good feedback, and I got some pushback on it as well. I got a lot of card dealers. I got a lot of guys that sell electronically really pushed back on that, saying, well, those days have come and gone. They'll never be like that again. Well, whose fault is that? It's the dealers and the guys that took the hobby from children and turned it into basically a stock market.
Yep.
And it saddens me. And I shared some of my enjoyment as a child growing up collecting baseball cards. I still collect. I've been putting sets together pack by pack for my 5-year-old son. It's a hobby I want to pass on to him.
Fantastic.
But I'll tell you what, you better be middle class or up. Poor people ain't buying baseball cards anymore.
Not with the price. Absolutely not. What? Not with the price. I've got last count, just a guesstimated count, Billy. I probably got 50,000. I probably got 50,000 cards in somewhere in inventory someplace around here. Either in storage or elsewhere. I'm not joking. I collected like you wouldn't believe. You wrote a great piece yesterday, and where can people find that one? I would appreciate, because the piece that I'm talking about is the Shoeless Joe piece. And now That did not appear on Baseball Magazine. Is that right?
That is correct. I do some side writing for a site called FueledBySports.com. I write 3 times a week for that site. I kind of have the leeway to write about anything I wish. I was approached by the editor there, Nathan Green. He hired me to contribute and try and get some traffic numbers up on that site, given my background. So I agreed to write 3 times a week, and he's given me the leeway. And you can find that piece, that Shoeless Joe Jackson piece,
yep,
on FueledBySports.com, right on the front page.
Absolutely. And it was an excellently, excellently written piece. I appreciate you bringing it to us.
Thank you.
Because it's why I reached out to you tonight. I said, hey, this is going to be on our agenda for tomorrow night, and I want you to come on and voice your opinion on it. I appreciate you being here with us. Go ahead.
Absolutely. The other name that's kind of tied to Joe Jackson that a lot of people don't talk about is Buck Weaver. Had I had a bigger format, I'd have expanded that piece and gone into the whole Buck Weaver. He, too, is ineligible. And, again, like Joe Jackson, did nothing wrong. He knew about it, but there's still a lack of evidence that he ever took one red set. He had an outstanding World Series. He was banned. He was one of the premier third basemen of the dead ball era. So you could go on and on about several members of that Black Sox team that have all been thrown in with the cheaters that probably deserve a second chance, but you'll never see it with Rob Manfred because he doesn't have the backbone or the stones to do it.
That's a shame. That's a shame, man. I'm going to tell you something right now, Billy. I kind of was hoping that we were going to see a different kind of, regime, I guess is the way to put it. Billy Brost, I appreciate you being here with us from Wyoming. Folks, please get over baseballmagazine.net and keep that website going. They're doing great stuff over there. There's only a couple of weeks left of baseball. Great stuff over there. I was just checking it out again this morning. Wow, just really, really neat. Neat vintage. The way you guys weave it all in together, just terrific stuff. Billy, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it, man.
Bye.
All right. There you go. We got into a couple of, tangentiary sort of conversations there, which were all good. I appreciate everybody jumping in on that. Thank you very, very much. I only got a couple of minutes here. And what we got to do is we got to get into our, and we've got quite a few agenda items here for next week, which is, all fine and good, because hopefully by that point I'll have a better voice and stamina than I do right now. Anyhow, Series Streak Challenge coming down to week number, I think we're at 22. Hold on. Yes, we are at week 22. For the Series Streak Challenge, and right now, here's how things are standing. Sean, you might have been absent for a couple of weeks, but you made some ground. Good for you, buddy. I'm sitting up at the top at 12-9. Nick and Sean, Nick, what the heck happened to you, dude? You, like, dropped off. I mean, you were running away with this thing. You're now 10-11. You're a game under 500. Sean now has worked his way up to 10-11. That's good for you, Sean. Caleb, 9-12. And so let's run around the room here real quick for this week's choices. I'm bringing you Caleb's. Does anybody want to guess?
Pirates.
Yep, we're going to take the Pirates over the Cardinals. You know, I asked him, and he says, well, I'll send it over to you during the day. And I sat there waiting for, like, I don't know, 2 hours, 90 minutes. He comes back and he says, Pirates. I was like, dude, I should have just made the pick for you. Anyhow, Sean, where are we going?
I think the Angels are going to surprise the Rangers this week.
Angels over the Rangers. Okay, good for you. I'm not picking the Angels over the Rangers, so you'll be happy about that one.
Okay, thank God.
Nick, where are we heading?
Mike, you're not, but I am. I had it written down in honor of my potentially epic collapse. I'm gonna go with the Angels over the Rangers as well.
Okay, so we got the two of you on that one. Angels over the Rangers. I'll take a true underdog. I'm going with the Cincinnati Reds over the Milwaukee Brewers. There you go. You can find our picks momentarily up over on Frat House Sports, our Facebook page. Frat House Sports, get over to Facebook, type in Frat House Sports, leave spaces in between, and look for our little purple icon and give us a like right there. Guys, thank you very much. Great program again this evening. Apologies for being a bit under the weather. Hopefully things will be good in the next couple of days. Tomorrow night, you want to be right here with us for our Frat House Sports show. I don't even know what number it is. 208, I think. I think we're at 208. But it's the one before our fourth anniversary. Next week, we'll be celebrating our fourth anniversary. I got a couple of guests already lined up. I don't remember who they are. I got to be honest with you guys. But that's all right. You want to be here at 7 p.m. Eastern time for 2 hours. You can bet there'll be football. A lot of NFL football on the agenda. Be here for that one right here. In the meantime, you know what you got to do. get out there and enjoy what's left of baseball.